They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise the name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, y'all, welcome to Who Shout Ya? It's your boy, I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today, film reviews editor at The Rep, el mero mero de Navidad y no se te olvida. That's right. The one and only Alonso Duralde. Alonso, what's good with you, bro?
I'm running out of Christmas time. I wait for it all year and then it slips away so quickly. My what's good is actually, I like listening to Christmas music and I like to keep it updated and not just like have the same old stuff every year. So this year, what I have slipped into the mix is the old 97s have recorded a holiday album. They are, I guess, Americana is the sort of catch-all description.
Okay. We
were talking before about music that borders on country but isn't.
But isn't quite exactly, totally.
I've been a big fan of Rhett Miller for ages. He's their lead singer. He's also done a lot of really cool solo stuff. I mean, when I first moved to Dallas, he was this like teen prodigy who put out a solo album that was, I thought, really amazing, even though he sang the whole thing in a British accent because apparently he'd been listening to too many Morrissey records. But he doesn't do that anymore. Anyway, it's a fun album. It's a mix of standards and some original stuff. And so if you are sick to death of, you know, Bublé and company, give the old 97s a shot.
No, and what's the, is it a whole Christmas album?
It's a whole album. I think it's called The Old 97s, Love the Holidays.
All right, y'all listen and go out there and Christmas juke to that. Go ahead and do that. And there she go right there. Looking. I mean, you have a look today. You have a look.
I have a look today.
You do.
I'm going for like 80s Adrian Barbeau.
Yes.
This is my natural spirit.
Aww. Well, when you behind that microphone, I'm getting fog realness.
Thank you.
She's the host of the Switchblade Sisters podcast right here at Max Fun. It is one and only April Wolf. April, what is good with you?
So I didn't realize that Lil Rel Howery had a TV show.
Oh, yeah.
And
yes, Rel.
So I just watched all of Rel yesterday that was available, and it's a really great fucking sitcom. It's got, like, the canned laughter and everything, you know, because it's a multi-cam sitcom, you know, on a stage. But it is so delightfully weird, and I love all the characters that he plays, and there's a really fun dynamic that's happening with these characters as they develop them, and I'm excited for what they can figure out for season two, because season one is usually just like throw shit at the wall,
right,
see what sticks, and I hope that season two is just like a total hit for him, because it's a great fucking show. Do you watch it?
I haven't watched the show yet, but I did. It's funny that you're saying this, because on Sunday, I spent the day just watching Comedy Central specials all day, and I watched his half hour on Comedy Central, and it was fucking hilarious. And we have a special guest today. We've only heard her giggle so far. We've only heard her. You can say words. You can talk. You can jump in there.
I wasn't sure if it was going to be like a, I don't know, weird surprise.
You spoiled your intro.
I'm so sorry.
No, not at all.
I just wanted to giggle at Rel.
She's a TV writer who's written for Big Hero 6. She's currently developing the Rugrats reboot at Nickelodeon. Ladies and gentlemen, Jenny Jaffe is with us today. Jenny.
Hello. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hi.
How are you? Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me.
Absolutely. What is good with you, Jenny?
I'm going to New Zealand in 2 days.
Ooh,
so I'm very excited.
Oh, what's taking you to New Zealand?
It's a trip my family has had planned for like years. This is just like, there's never been a time that my sister and my parents and I could all just go somewhere together for an extended period of time. And so we've just had this booked. Like when I took my current job, my mom's first thing was like, you have to tell them you are taking 2 weeks off at the end of December. And I was like, okay. So this has been in the works for forever. And I'm really excited. We're going to go to Weta, which I'm extra excited about because I'm a big dork. So I'm very stoked.
Because
we're doing like the Lord of the Rings tour. It's going to be beautiful or whatever, I'm sure. But I'm like, I want
to
go see Weta.
Weta.
Like, I'm
absolutely
very stoked about that.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Oh, hey, Ricky.
Hey.
What's good?
Oh, thanks, April.
Merry Christmas, April.
I know. He put his head down. And he waited.
What's good with me is you spent all day yesterday watching a TV show. I spent all day on Saturday watching the first season of Killing Eve. It's now on Hulu. Have you seen this?
I have
Killing
not, but
Eve
everybody
show?
Tells me I need it to, and so it's good. On my very long list.
Have you seen this Killing Eve
things.
Show? Oh, yeah. It is fantastic. Jenny, you're a television writer. Have you seen this
I
show?
I haven't yet. I've been writing too much TV to watch much of it this year.
Okay, sure.
So
sure.
I need to, like, maybe while I'm, you know, I have like a 17-hour plane
ride. I was going
to
say, you got a plane trip, guys.
Knock that mug out. Killing Eve, though, it's fantastic. It's very similar to Mad Men as far as, like, it feels like a movie just because, like, how well it's shot.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I want to know, like, what the budget is on this show because, like, they go all around the world. It's, like, it's global. Sandra Oh is chasing this female assassin just across the world. And eventually they almost start to have a respect for each other because they know, like, they just kind of know what roles
like
they fit.
Like a Valjean and Javert kind of
See, that's what I was
deal.
About to say, though. Yeah. That's what I was about to say, though. So yeah, Valjean is shit. Yeah, yeah. Killing Eve. Talk to that. On today's episode, y'all, we are going to be talking about the new Natalie Portman movie, Vox Lux. We've also got another edition of the El Mero Mero de Navidad Christmas Minute. And as always, we will have our staff picks. But first, we have It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? And here's how it works. We're all going to read a news blurb headline. Any one of us can jump in by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? This first one is a big one. This happened just a few days ago. This all happened in the matter of 48 hours. Kevin Hart was slated to host the Oscars in 2019. After some old homophobic tweets of his were found online and some stand-up material, the Academy asked him to apologize. Kevin Hart did not apologize. He refused. He posted an Instagram video explaining one of the quotes was, "People need to stop looking for reasons to be negative." He said a lot, but that was one of the things he said. And then shortly thereafter, he announced via Twitter that he would be stepping down as Oscars host. Is this important? Do you all care?
What a shock that was. Oh. Yeah. We didn't see that coming right? at all.
This has just been a roller coaster because, like, look, if Kevin Hart has had a change of heart in the time since he wrote that stuff, yes, thank you. Bully for him. But the way to express that is not to be like, stop being so negative. I don't want to apologize for anything. And you know, being super defensive about it. It's like, that doesn't sound like somebody who has had a journey here and evolved, you know. And
Eminem has had more of a journey.
Frankly, yeah. You know, it's like, and so the fact that he pushed back on it, why not? With the 3-6 Mafia.
Yeah, he's an Academy Award winner.
Also, no disrespect, Academy Award winner.
That's
Marshall
right.
Mathers, yes. Eminem.
Sorry,
thank you.
But anyway, so his whole pushback on this was so wrong. And then people are trying to be all like, oh, but, you know, it's from so long ago. These are tweets from like 2010 we're talking about here. And let's not even bring up the fact that 3 years ago, he thought Get Hard was a smart idea for a movie.
That's what you're most upset about.
Get Hard. Because, well, I'll tell you, go to YouTube. Our friend of the show, Louis Vertel, did the junket for that movie. And he basically, in the interview with Hart and Ferrell, was like, why are y'all doing this old school hacky bullshit? And Kevin Hart, like, explained to him that, funny is funny.
Yeah. Louis Vertel asked him that question?
Yeah. To his face.
That's kind of crazy.
He's my king.
That's kind of crazy.
You know, and Guy Branum had a really good sort of thread today about, like, it has happened so often where little kids who display effeminate behavior or talk about being gay or whatever get beaten to death by their parents. And so when Kevin Hart makes a joke about how I'm going to slam a dollhouse on my kid's head if he starts acting gay, A, that's not even a joke. And B, that's the kind of shit that people take home from the show that is not at the merch table. And that he's putting that stuff out in the world and then feeling like he gets to walk it back without actually saying, you know what, I was an asshole and that was wrong and I regret having said it and I don't feel that way now, which is all he had to say, then it's like, no, I'm sorry. You bobbled this whole opportunity. Who do you think watches the goddamn Academy Awards? Homos. We're the audience. Like, we're the biggest chunk of the people devoted to watching that stupid show. So anyway, that's it.
I feel like this is such a complicated issue. Anything I say right now will be just completely misconstrued. So I think this is important, and I care.
I'm not of the school that, like, oh, let's cancel comedians for life because they said a thing that was controversial.
Yeah, that's very scary.
You know, Nick Cannon drags up, like, instances where, like, Amy Schumer and Sarah Silverman used the F word. And, like, those people all perpetually apologize for stuff they've said. Mm-hmm. Like, Sarah Silverman is constantly reevaluating things and talking about stuff that she said for shock value.
Hulu.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, she's trying to keep a job.
Constantly. And so it's like, I don't buy this thing of, like, comedians, the thought that comedians might think that something they said 5 years ago when it was considered, like, appropriate or not scandalous or whatever, and is now looked at as punching down, can't go back and say, you know what, I thought that then, the world thought that then. Obviously, things are different now. I don't feel that way, and I don't stand by that. Yes, it's going to live forever on Twitter or on YouTube or whatever. But it's like the idea that bringing this stuff up is somehow censorship or somehow anti-comedy or, oh, I can't be funny anymore because blah 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 blah. It's like, no.
We need to be clear. He wasn't making a joke when he said he was going to smash a dollhouse on his.
Yeah,
it's a bad joke. It's a bad joke. It's a bad joke. It's in the special, and it's a bad joke. And in an interview with Rolling Stone, he calls out that it was wrong for him to do that, and he says that the point of view that he was trying to do with that joke is that he's an insecure father who has flaws. Again, horrible way to, like, get that joke across. Horrible way.
Because it manages to be both homophobic and misogynist. But... I mean, I think, honestly, it's just what Alonzo's saying is just that his apology was like a non-apology. Like,
totally, yeah.
And I mean, that's like the biggest thing is just like, because I mean, like, look, we all went and saw that fucking Kevin Hart movie.
Exactly.
I would be fine if he succeeds and he makes a good movie, you know, and that kind of thing. But, you know, whatever, host the Oscars, I don't care. But just, you know, cover your ass and be like a kind person to the people that you're performing to.
Yeah, it just seems weird that I don't like that he lost the job because his apology was bad.
No,
it was like
he lost
the
job.
An apology.
He did apologize later in the night. The last thing he did was apologize in like the manner of those.
After losing the gig, he apologized. But up until that moment, he was very adamantly he did that Instagram video that he wasn't gonna.
No, totally. No, because he had already apologized for it before in the Rolling Stone interview. I'm talking about.
That one was a weak tea bullshit apology.
And that's also like
when it's not like an apology that like we approve of. That's when I get nervous. Of like, well, then just show me like what the template is for. Like,
you know the difference between an I'm sorry if you were offended apology and an I'm sorry I said a stupid thing apology.
100%. But I also know the difference between like, well, I mean, I guess that's what you're saying, like these fake apologies that come out. Like if he would have given that apology and we know the history about him, then it's still just like, oh, thank you for saying like the exact words that we wanted to hear that somebody probably fed to you right before you like took the microphone. It's like, well, I don't want that shit either. Either be who you are, be your genuine self and give me a genuine apology or a form of what you think is a genuine apology. And then we'll take it from there. This thing where, like, somebody now will lose a job, whether it's Kevin Hart or somebody who, like, you know, I mean, that's a comic that we all enjoy that maybe we find in the past has said terrible things, Sarah Silverman, and they lose their job. I don't like that. I don't like when something is taken away from somebody because it doesn't meet society's online societies or society's.
You got to understand that he is right. The main audience for this show is gay people.
And you know how great the Academy has been towards gay people.
And it's just like, exactly, well, I mean.
The history that they have. Well, and minorities, like the Academy is great.
Yeah.
I mean, Mel Gibson got nominated last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, and you know exactly. What? And people like us bitched about that.
Totally, yeah.
You know,
it's
and
absolutely.
So it's not.
There's a weird hypocrisy that's happening
right
absolutely. Now, right?
And yeah. I will say this. Solomon Giorgio, another friend of the show, mm-hmm. tweeted, he goes, there are two things, and they can both be true. One, Kevin Hart said awful shit about LGBT people and needs to apologize for it. Two, black entertainers are held to a different standard than other people.
Yes.
Both of those things can be true, and neither one negates from the other one. So in the case of Kevin Hart, I mean, yeah, we can point to that as a thing of like, yes, they probably were tougher on him because he's a black comic. At the same time, all of this stuff that he said is reprehensible, and he did not handle dialing it back nearly well enough.
The people
absolutely.
That I saw on Twitter, though, were black women who were mad
oh, yeah,
about it.
Black,
so it was largely led by non-white.
Black gay Twitter was totally all over it, too.
Yeah, like that was a – so it's one of – you know – It's just a complex thing.
And
we're in the
issue.
Middle of it.
No, like I think the bigger issue here that really struck me about all this is that these are tweets from 2010, and this is someone who's had a thriving film career since then. And I guess it's something I've been thinking about a lot, also in terms of like Me Too and everything. And it's like, well, haven't they been punished enough or whatever? And I'm like, where? Mm-hmm. Like, in terms of any celebrity, especially men who behave badly, where it's like they've had this thing happen or this thing come out, and then the only repercussion seems to be people being mad. It's never like, I don't, as far as I know, he's never lost out on like a lucrative film role for these. I understand that it's different. I just think that's sort of the more interesting piece. It's like, why the Oscars? Is it just because the audience is largely gay? It just feels like these are 8-year old. I'm not saying I don't think he should have. I'm just wondering why this is the sort of first reckoning that's happened, given that so much of entertainment is run by the LGBTQ community. But at the same time, I mean, he's a lucrative star. And so it's like, this is not, like, so for people who are being like, this punishment is going too far, I'm like, what punishment? He still made millions of dollars last year.
He's
like,
not starving.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He's got a movie coming out in
it's
February.
It's like people being like...
It really does.
He's got like 3 movies a year.
He's always got a movie coming out in February.
Like, for a lot of these dudes who have had, you know, things come out that have sort of stunted their career in some way, really what they're doing right now is taking a million dollars vacation somewhere. They're not like... struggle, like, there's really been no legal nobody's gone to prison.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Louis C.K. is not sacking at Trader Joe's.
Right. And that would be too good, too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, nobody's, like...
Sorry. In my head, I'm thinking sacking is, like, putting your nuts on him.
He's probably doing that.
I was saying, that he is doing at Trader Joe's.
Like, immediately, I was just like, that's a weird thing to do at Trader Joe's. And I was like, no, he's talking about
that is for Whole Foods. Like,
yeah, don't bring that Whole Foods mentality.
And there's a little sign at Whole Foods like, if you don't like it, then you don't have to come in. But we've got Louis C.K. sacking tonight, okay?
Also, are you an Amazon Prime member?
Should we move on?
Yeah, I think we should move on. Yeah. I'm glad we were able to have that conversation, because I was glad, and I'm glad that we all got to, like, say what it is we wanted to say in a good. I was afraid that we were just going to give quick hot takes and bounce, but that's a complicated issue. So I'm glad we did all that. April, do you want to take this last story here?
Yeah, this one's interesting. Wow, this one's real interesting. Very important story. In a move that can only be called disrespectful, Disney is moving forward with Sister Act 3 without the venerable Whoopi Goldberg.
What?
Variety announced that the film would debut on Disney's upcoming streaming service, Disney Plus. Not Google Plus, you guys. Disney Plus. It's a good thing they stole a name from a now defunct app. That's great. It bodes well. In the original Sister Act, as I'm sure we all know, Whoopi played a lounge singer who entered witness protection and had to pretend to be a nun. She teaches the convent to sing. Some old nuns get mad. Kathy Najimy is there. It's great. Sister Act 2 also has our great Lauryn Hill.
It does.
Thank you.
When Entertainment Weekly asked Whoopi about the situation, a representative replied, quote, "It is our understanding that this is not a continuation and Whoopi is not involved." Is this important? Do you care?
I auditioned for Sister Act 2 when I was a child, and that's when I learned I do not have a singing voice. I did not get the role, so I say Sister Act 3. I mean, I wish you all the luck. Do well.
I bet anybody...
I don't like to go back to those memories. It was one of the most embarrassing experiences of my life.
That anybody like thinks it's newsworthy that a movie with 3 in the title does not have the star of 1 and 2 clearly does not pay attention to, like, direct-to-DVD sequels.
I was in a sequel that did not have the star.
Oh, which one?
SLC Punk.
Oh. They did a sequel to that movie?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's on Netflix. I'm in it. it's another generation of punks in Utah, and I play a goth Mormon.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice. Those exist. So.
They do.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
You don't have to go that far to be a goth Mormon. Like, you wear blue, I think, and that's, you know.
And you're like, oh, why is it so dark today?
I don't know. I guess I'm just like, and I know I'm somebody working on a reboot, but I guess I'm just like, oh, this seems fine. Like, I guess, is it important? Do I care? No.
Yeah. And that's the perfect response to that. That's the perfect response.
It does make me want to watch Sister Act. I just remember how much I enjoyed the first Sister Act.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So. I don't know if it holds up. I haven't seen it since I was a kid. But.
Go back and see.
More than Nuns on the Run.
What is Nuns on the Run?
What?
Oh, it's a great film.
From the director of Clue.
Really? Well, I love Clue.
Mm-hmm. This is not that.
Rob Corddry? Is that right? Rob Corddry and Eric Idle? Nuns on the Run?
Not Rob Corddry. It's, other big character actor.
Oh, it is.
Damn it, Ricky.
That's all right. We're going to take Robbie Coltrane
and Eric Idle in Nuns on the Run, which my sister and I rented quite a bit. I don't know.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Hey, we have to take a break. We have to take a break. When we come back, we are going to be talking about Vox Lux.
Hey, if you like your podcast to be focused and well-researched and your podcast host to be uncharismatic, unhorny strangers who have no interest in horses, then this is not the podcast for you.
Again, what's your deal? I'm Emily.
I'm Lisa.
Our show's called Baby Geniuses.
And its hosts are horny adult idiots. We discover weird Wikipedia pages every episode.
We discuss institutional misogyny.
We ask each other the dumbest questions, and our listeners won't stop sending us pictures of their butts.
We haven't asked them to stop, but they also aren't stopping.
Join us on Baby Geniuses
every other week on MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are
April Wolf,
Jenny Jaffe,
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today we are talking about Vox Lux. Jenny, I know you have thoughts about this movie.
So many thoughts.
Can you just give us just a quick synopsis of the film?
Sure. Okay. So Natalie Portman plays Celeste, and the movie starts when she's a young girl played by Raffi Cassidy. Is
yes,
that her name?
That's correct.
Who is the survivor of a school shooting. And as part of her recovery, she and her sister write a song that then becomes a huge, like, viral sensation. And she sort of overnight becomes this pop star under the tutelage of a very creepy Jude Law. And we learn a lot about the things that we get sort of the blanks filled in by a narration of Willem Dafoe, that she grows up and she becomes Natalie Portman. And she has a daughter. She had a daughter when she was young, also played by Raffi Cassidy. Maybe the one good decision this movie made. And I know I shouldn't be editorializing yet, but I hated this movie.
Oh, wow.
So,
We'll get there.
So Natalie Portman is this sort of mess. She's never really dealt with the trauma because she just kind of became a celebrity instead. And she's got a very contentious relationship with her sister, who's effectively raising her daughter. And the night of a big show to reveal her new album, she finds out that there was a terrorist attack carried out by people wearing masks of a video, the music video that she did one time. And so it's sort of a movie in two acts, and that's sort of the second act is adult Celeste the night before the show interacting with her daughter and dealing with this news.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty right. And it's directed by Brady Corbett. What do we think he's trying to say? Because you hit on things in this movie that I was just not expecting were going to happen in this movie. There's school shootings. The movie starts with a school shooting, and then just like the way that she becomes a star, and just its opinions on pop music in general. Like, what do we think Brady Corbett was trying to say? Because he throws it, I feel like, all against
the
wall.
So I saw this at the Dome at the ArcLight, and Brady Corbett and Natalie Portman did a Q&A after, which I did not know they were going to do. And
inside scoop, nice.
And the interviewer asked, "Where did the inspiration come from this?" And Brady Corbett just goes, "The news." And I really just can't say enough how much this movie missed the mark for me. A movie I really wanted to like, a movie that seemed aimed at me based on Natalie Portman's makeup alone. And it really seems like he wants to go back in time and make the first movie about Columbine and shock us with it. I don't know if I have a completely dissenting opinion from everybody else here, but it's 5 good seeds for a movie, Frankensteined into something, and then duct taped over with a voiceover that promises better movies. I hate narration. And I especially hated this narration. Go for it.
I'm not quibbling with hardly anything you're saying. This movie, Brady Corbett, I find, is an interesting figure. Like, this is a guy who started off.
He's a white 30-year-old.
Beyond that.
but those are strikes for you.
I mean,
I'm a white, almost 30-year-old, okay. And those are strikes for me.
he has gotten to do the thing that only white guys. Almost only white guys
Thank
get to
you.
Do,
yes.
Which is he went from like pretty teen idol type, like he was in that terrible live action Thunderbirds movie that flopped.
Oh,
and then decided like, no, I'm going to be interesting. And so then he did like he was in Greg Araki's Dangerous Mysterious Skin. Mm-hmm. He was in the American remake of Funny Games, and now he's directing, and he is directing ambitious films that. Don't entirely work for me, but like The Childhood of a Leader, which was his first movie, I was impressed by a lot of it, even though I wasn't loving it. And then this one, kind of neither. I wasn't impressed or loving it because I thought that it opens really strong, but once Natalie Portman appears as Celeste, she is... Staten Islanding it as hard as she can.
And I should have loved that, too. I love a crazy Natalie Portman. I didn't even think the first part worked. Here's what I thought worked. I thought the opening sequence and then the credit sequence worked. I thought that...
The whole
procession
credits at the beginning.
Of Love ambulances that. Was beautiful.
Yes.
And I was so ready. I was so on board.
Why does this movie give you all the credits in the opening credits and then all of them again in the closing credits?
I thought that, I got up and left
I
right away.
I think it was supposed to be like a sort of symmetry thing. I thought that sort of. But the reason that it didn't work for me is because I'm like, none of this reads to me as the motivations and ambitions of a little girl. This reads to me as like, yeah, if I got overnight famous, here's what I'd do. And I was like, none of this reads like it's coming from a genuine place of like a trying to understand a childhood trauma.
That's it's interesting.
It doesn't seem to reverberate through the film the way that it should, given the importance that it's given up front.
I didn't
right.
And I didn't feel like it was. I felt like this, like every time, like people like the lines, I could very much hear the typewriter. I can very much hear, like, the director, like, this is what he believes. I wasn't always on board that, like these are real characters and these things have, like, happened to them and the experience is, like, there. Like, I was, like, reading online, just reading a bunch about it, and they kept, like, bringing up the trauma and the trauma and the trauma. And I was like, when I watched the movie, I didn't really feel like anybody was suffering from trauma because they were just so much just – either like in the scene that is happening or just reacting to what's happening around them.
Or it was like just kind of general sort of post Valley of the Dolls, like, oh, I'm famous and it's terrible.
Okay, you just hit on something why I fucking love this movie.
Okay. You were being real quiet.
Oh, this is great.
You were being real quiet. I was waiting for this.
Love this movie.
Yes.
Fucking Natalie Portman channeling Patty Duke. Channeling Patty Duke. It is so good.
I love this.
I love this movie so much. And I was like watching it and I was just like, do I hate this movie? Do I love this movie? I was like watching it while I was on the elliptical.
It's so funny because I had that too and I came to I hate it. But while I was watching it, I was like, do I love it? I wanted so badly to.
For me, it took like a good 10 minutes where I like sat there and I was just like, okay, whoa. And then I was like, no, this is fucking awesome. If I tear apart these little pieces of cinema that he's using, that he's taking from classic cinema and kind of pumping into this, it's almost like a pastiche in a way. Like you have these moments, there's a really great moment where the young version of Celeste is like lying on a bed and she's just had sex for the first time. And you have this lovely swell of a score that feels like it could be from a Hitchcock 1950s, intrigue. You know, she's like a femme fatale that comes in and like the camera's stationary and it's just beautiful and composed there. And it is melodrama, you know, it is beautiful melodrama that is also seen in a different light, because this is a very tame version of melodrama in the same way. I find it fascinating. And so I was just fascinated by what he was doing. And I'm more inclined to love something for the risks that someone takes, especially if it feels like they have a certain complex understanding of classic film. And that's something that I felt like I did see in this. And but, I know that Alonzo's going to argue against it, but it is a beautiful mess to me.
Here's my thing with Natalie Portman. Like, I'm watching her act in this one. Like, there are certain performances where I lose her.
Yes, you're supposed to. She's not even in her own body, even in her own skin. Like, her character is acting as a human who's not her own person.
I like
she
that.
Doesn't exist. She's just like a character who is a character of a character. Yeah. Like, it's almost meta in a manner.
I did catch that. I felt like when she shows up, she's such like a different character than who she was as a child.
Yeah.
And it's so much like, I don't know. I mean, we don't know. I mean, I don't know if she's been beaten down so much or like it's the fame and the demand and everything, but she is just kind of like this shell that just like reacts to everybody, and it will tell you like what she's fucking feeling. It'll be like, can I just tell them to go fuck off? Like, and like, I liked that aspect of her character, because for the first half of the movie, you're watching this little girl who, and at least I was wondering, like, where the fuck is Natalie Portman at in this movie?
Yeah.
But like, you're watching this little girl, like, just going through these motions of, you know, trying to like find out what it is that she wants to do and who she wants to become. And then when we do meet her as that, it's like, oh man, that person's gone. And now it's this.
She cannot carry Patty Duke's luggage. I'm sorry.
Real quick, I just want to break this down from a screenwriting perspective,
okay,
because this is where it absolutely drove me insane. So what you've kind of got are these snippets of scenes that feel like the filler scenes from better movies. And I say that because every time Willem Dafoe, and that fucking narration
so much narration.
He's describing a more interesting movie. So I'm specifically yes! thinking, so after this beautiful cinematic moment, which I agree is really gorgeous, this monologue she gives while she's lying in bed and looking like Natalie Portman, it's kind of shocking. She, like, her face becomes Natalie Portman's face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She goes and she finds her sister in bed with Jude Law. And then instead of watching that relationship deteriorate in any way that would have been interesting or meaningful or a slightly more difficult lift for a screenwriter, you get Willem Dafoe saying, "And so as our nation lost its innocence, so did Celeste." And I was just like, okay, it feels like he's telling us he can handle this theme, but he's not handling this theme.
Oh, yeah. By the way, 9/11 is happening while all this is going
on. It's like he's pitching a bunch of movies. And like, or even just like, he pitches the movie of Celeste got in a car accident at one point and she ran over a guy and she's been dealing with that, or like any of the things that happened.
Yeah, that she's supposedly the drinking rubbing alcohol or whatever the hell.
Yeah, I'm like that. Like, I want to watch that spiral, or yeah, I want to watch this deal with the devil she apparently made. I'm like, all of this feels shoehorned in, even her rise to fame. I think the more interesting movie would have been to just pare everything back and make the film about a little girl who survives a shooting and becomes a viral star for it.
That's
and
dumb.
To me, it's a better movie. I'm sorry. Not, yeah, it is.
Not, no, because it's a traditional structure, and I think that you're right about the going from the first act to the second act, and in fiction writing we call that the white space, which is where, you know, a writer gets so scared to write what is actually in the scene that they jump to white space instead, and they just they stop the scene and then they go into the
it
next
all
one
felt like
they don't
TK
do it.
Story, but like, that's what I was
but I didn't feel like that like throughout it happening. I'm not going to say that this is a perfect film, but I love the risks that it's taking. But I think that what you're describing to me sounds like a more boring version of what we got, because that to me seems like it's a story that like anyone could tell, really.
Yeah, but I didn't think he could tell this movie.
But that seems like a trajectory of like, and then this, and then this, and then this. And,
sure,
and
it doesn't have to be prosaic.
I get tired
but,
of that, seeing so many movies
but
where I'm just
like,
I don't
fucking
want to see
narration,
that all the time.
I hate, like all that telling and so little showing. It's like there's other ways to do it without just ticking off the boxes
Honestly, I feel like the movie that this was, I would have liked as a miniseries if we could have fleshed out some of that. Because it's like, I just didn't feel like he proved his stylistic ability. He proved his point of view, but he didn't to me at all prove his storytelling ability. So I believed that those narrations were not in there artistically, but because he physically could not write those moments.
I did like the part where they explained the Swedish pop music boom of the 2000s.
I also like that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, just like look, yeah. Can we cut out the montage? Put it as a short.
it's like in Casino where they show you how Vegas works, and it's way more interesting than any of the actual story.
I am a person who loves associative storytelling, and I like it actually when there's a vagueness and a kind of blankness to, like, there are things that I get to jump to and kind of use my imagination to kind of fill in this stuff. And it's one of those things where you're seeing a lot of critics writing about this movie, and all of them have a different take about what they think it is about, which to me made it more interesting to me. It made it more fascinating where, like, some people are like, oh, they're talking about how pop music is an escape from trauma and tragedy and how it can heal. And other people are like, oh, it's saying that pop music is the worst thing and it's, like, mechanical and doesn't do anything for you and it's just, you know, about a deal with the devil or something like that. And so you have these extremely polarizing opinions about what people think it is. And to me, that's just fun. When I think about how a film is going to live in filmic history, too, I'm just like, that's fun. Someone can return to this and be like, what the fuck is this movie?
That's like the Star Is Born debate over, like, when she starts doing the dancing music, is she selling out, or is she, like, establishing her independence from Bradley Cooper's, like, country stuff?
Yeah.
My thing was, like, you know, okay, so if this viral thing's happening out of a school shooting, it's like, If she becomes this mega star out of it, like, I would like to know, does that have any bearing on the, like, gun control debate in this version of reality? And for that matter, like, how does it, you know, apart from the thing with the terrorists and the mask, what does carrying that burden of this issue and this incident around do to her? I never really got a clear picture of that either. Like, the movie sort of skates over it and pretends like it's talking about it, and I felt like it never was.
I felt like it was pretty evident. Like, she felt like she couldn't not perform, you know? Like, this is like, I'm doing this to bring joy to people, and this is like, I survived, so I have to do this. And it's almost like I'm sacrificing myself and my actual life that I want to be this pop star because it's supposed to be like this thing I have to do.
And it's become this thing now where she doesn't even necessarily enjoy it anymore because she kind of sees the lie behind it and, like, the commercialism aspect of it. And when she has, like, that scene with her daughter in the diner and just goes, like, on this huge, like, monologue rant. And
God, I hated that scene.
Oh, so much.
I
She's
love
never
that.
Looked
I thought
better,
that was
though.
Great.
She looks great.
You're so right.
I love her hair and makeup.
She looked beautiful.
The jeans, too, like, a little bit baggy.
I love the daughter's jacket with the fringe. As we're talking, one thing that occurs to me is this movie was made by somebody who hates pop music because it is not for him. Pop music is for women, for gay men, for specifically for queer people of color. Like, I think that those are the places where pop music has
pop music.
But I think people like Madonna and Gaga and Beyonce, they are not out there for the straight white dudes. And I felt like she was not, like, that's the thing. Like, there was no love for... I have a huge love for pop music, so I feel like maybe that's also why I was like...
I don't think he'd be working with Sia if he didn't like pop music. I'm just going to throw that out there, because I don't think that he would have Sia writing the music for this movie. And I also feel like there... To me, it seems like an explicit message where he's saying that pop music is healing to people. And, you know, it's just maybe, like, the mechanisms of pop music that are fucking destructive. But pop music itself, you know, like, she's doing this because she wants people to feel good. You know, she went into pop because I want people to feel good because I felt terrible during this time.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get anything out of that whole final concert. I was like, it didn't.
Well,
whatever.
She got a costume change. I was like, she's a pop star? No, she isn't.
But whatever point it was trying to make,
I either
thought something was going to happen or something would be conveyed or something. But it's like, no, this is we're just going to have a pop concert now. And it's like, what does this have to do with anything? What are you illuminating about the character? How are you polishing up whatever story there is, which is not much.
I wanted it to end on a piano version of her doing the song that made her famous in the first place, and how much it's changed, and how the audience is all singing, and it doesn't really mean anything anymore.
Sure.
I was like, I didn't like the movie, but if it ended like that, I'd be like, okay, he kind of understands story structure. Like, this is an okay senior thesis. But, like, it wasn't like, but yeah, to me, it was like empty. And that's, I think, why I thought he hates pop music, because I was like, he's never seen, she should be doing fucking gaga. I loved the sequence of her walking to the stage, and that's why I wanted to see this movie so bad, was that sequence in the trailer.
It's great.
Because I live for backstage pop documentaries. And this was like, she was doing just like a bodysuit, like 2009, like barely. Like,
Katy Perry is yawning somewhere.
So, Jenny, do you think people should screen this movie, stream this movie, or skip it?
What are you going to say?
I actually think
it is worth watching. If you're like a film person and want to get in on the debate, it's worth streaming. Or if you have a screener or a friend with a screener, I think that's fine. I don't want this director to have money for this. I don't want him to have been rewarded for it. And I don't want him to make a follow-up.
Oh, Vox Lux 2.
Vox Lux 2, still boxing.
Or, frankly, he's somebody who shouldn't...
All out of Lux.
Or he's somebody who shouldn't be an auteur. Because I actually think that...
Auteur?
Yeah, because I actually think his... stylistically, again, it's really, really interesting and cool. Mm-hmm. But he can't write a screenplay to save his life.
Alonzo?
I want to say skip, but this movie, there is so much weirdness about it. And because people I respect, like Dan Waters, who wrote Heathers, and people who I don't respect, like April Wolfe.
I have still not earned that.
No,
like, it's going to take another few years.
I'm kidding. No. My esteemed colleague, April Wolfe, obviously, is speaking up for this movie. So clearly, yes, this is a movie that is a Rorschach blot that people are going to take different stuff away from. I thought it was garbage, but you should probably see it and decide for yourself, so stream it.
April.
This is an extremely imperfect movie that I love for God knows why. But I still think you should stream it.
But I think it's really like, and it's so funny because it's like, I think the real thing is just how much do you enjoy your experience of watching it? Like, this isn't a movie that I guess you can really be objective in any way about. Like, I hated my experience of watching it. If I were in a different mood, maybe I would have been like, this is a crazy midnight movie. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like, it really might be.
Yeah, I watched it on a screener and not in a theater, and that might have made a difference. But I did do, like Dave was commenting later, I did a lot of, on the sofa. And I was like, God, this movie is up its own ass.
I did a lot of, what's this movie about? What's going on? Like,
what's going on?
I mean, that opening scene, I was like, there was a second where I was like, I'm in the wrong movie right now. They're like, oh, shit. I thought, there's what the fuck is going on? But overall, I would say stream this movie. I'm still fucking processing it.
Yeah.
I didn't hate it. I wasn't angry while I was watching it. I was just like, huh, okay, all right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to, we're going to take a question from our mailbag, from one of our listeners. So that's what's up. We will be right back.
I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne.
And I'm Judge John Hodgman.
If you live on the west coast of North America, we're coming your way.
That's right. Judge John Hodgman is taking justice to the west coast on tour. Starting where?
Vancouver, British Columbia, January 15th. Then to Seattle, Washington on the 16th. Portland, Oregon on the 17th. San Francisco, California on the 18th. And Los Angeles, California, the City of Angels, on January 22nd. Tickets are on sale now. You can find links to all of the shows at MaximumFun.org. And if you're going to be in one of those cities and you have a dispute we can try on stage, send it to us. Just go to MaximumFun.org/JJHO or email Hodgman at MaximumFun.org.
I'm ready to judge you on the road. Take that, Jack Kerouac, author of On the Road.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me are...
April Wolf, Jenny Jaffe,
Alonzo Duralde.
All right, this week we've got a letter from our mailbag. This one's from Josh in D.C. Josh says, what director whose first high-profile pictures were stellar were you most surprised / disappointed to see flame out? Oh, that's a good question.
Hmm.
That's really good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, my memory, my brain. Vox Lux wiped it out.
It was all that strobe.
I am also very sensitive to strobe, and I don't enjoy that all the time. I used to love it. Who's that guy who did the fucking time travel bunny movie?
Oh, Donnie Darko.
Richard Kelly.
Yeah, Richard Kelly.
That's a good one.
I stand really for the box, but I know I'm very much in the minority for that one.
I do too.
the second half of that is when I kind of go, wait.
But that went crazy enough for
me. Yeah,
that's
a lean into the crazy movie.
Yeah,
and it's in my Christmas book. Like that
is it a Christmas movie?
It is.
The box is a Christmas movie.
Go back and watch it. It is set entirely over Christmas. But there's that whole scene where they see the Santa Claus. Like ringing the bell in the middle of the street, and then the truck hits them. Yeah,
I
am not part of the Southland Tales cult, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's a movie where I was just like, no, I'm not into this. And that was his immediate follow up.
Yeah.
Although somebody sent a letter to Linoleum Knife to the podcast that Dave and I do, sort of talking, kind of running down what Southland Tales and what it's about, and how basically like the world has become Southland Tales in terms of like, you know, the sort of like totally like TV star president and the, you know, like just different.
Was it ahead of its time?
Basically, that was the argument that the letter was making. I haven't gone back to revisit the movie, but, you know, I might need to, I guess.
It's one of the few movies that I turned off very early on. I was like, either I'm too high for this movie or the weed's not working like I wanted to. So we're going to take a break. Oh, man, that is a good question. I can't think of a
Charles
director.
Charles Lawton.
What else?
He directed one movie, and then that was it.
I guess, like,
it's the great one and done of all time. He did Night of the Hunter, which is, like, a classic.
Shit.
Oh, yeah. The best movie ever made.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone who, like, slowly flamed out. Because, like, the only people I can think of are people who made, like, a great movie and then a bunch of bad movies. Or who had, like, a pretty like uneven canon, like I guess Tim Burton came to mind, but like that was such an uneven canon to begin with that I'm like not really, like,
do you think it went down though? I'm curious.
That's a great question.
Sleepy Hollow,
Mars Attacks.
Yeah, was Sleepy Hollow the first after Nightmare Before Christmas?
I think it might be,
because I feel like that was the cutoff point.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, here's a classic, and then wait a second.
Yeah, but then he's had movies I didn't hate in the interim. Like
he made Ed Wood, you know.
Well, Ed Wood was pre that.
Big Eyes. He did the Big Eyes movie.
Big Eyes.
That was.
I'm not a
not
fan.
Big Guys, but
big
eyes.
Big Eyes.
Yeah.
not my favorite.
Yeah,
but, you know.
I don't know. I guess that like that's the thing is like I don't know if there's anyone like surprised or
I mean, I was thinking about like directors who I like did an amazing film, and then it was like, where's the follow up?
Right,
you know, like a lot of women who have these like amazing Sundance movies, and then like directed a lot of HBO shows, or, you know, didn't start getting the gigs, or like Greg Mottola, who did The Day Trippers, and then did a ton of TV, and then finally like got to do Superbad, like, you know, almost a decade later, and then Adventureland, and like I think, you know, he's still doing cool stuff. I mean, of course, he also did Keeping Up with the Joneses, which was terrible, but you know,
he did the Alien movie too. With
Paul, yeah,
Paul. My husband did some editing on that. That's
All right, I finally figured one out here. I got one. Duncan Jones.
Where do you think he fell off?
The first two were good.
The first two were good, and I haven't seen Source Code, but it's like everybody know is like, it's
right.
Great.
Source Code's fun.
Then after that, Warcraft, and
fucking
I was like,
Warcraft.
And then I watched Mute, and that's one of the worst movies I've seen.
You're totally right. Yeah. When was Moon in all of that?
Moon
was first.
That was his first movie.
It was
that was
Moon,
first?
Yeah,
Moon,
that was
Source Code.
I thought it was second.
No. Moon was first, and then Source
Code.
Okay,
never mind.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, you're right. That's a steep drop.
Warcraft, I've heard, is like still like interesting to watch, just for like what he's trying to like do. No, really?
No. That was my worst film of that year.
Is that right?
I hated it so much.
And Moon was just like, oh, Moon is so great. Yeah. Moon is such a good movie, and like I was like, what are you doing next? And for some reason, I didn't see
Source
Code.
Well, I mean, you know, Martin McDonagh went from In Bruges to 3 Billboards.
it turns out.
Well, thanks for that question, Josh. I hope we answered it correctly or to your liking. Anybody else out there listening, if you want to write to us, any other questions, you can email us at whoshotya@maximumfun.org, or you can give us a call on our Who Shot line, which is WSY 803-1664. What are the numbers on WSY? That always confuses me, and I get worried that it confuses our listeners. They're like,
It's 979-879-803-1664.
Word. Well, before we go, Jenny, I was asked our guests if you ever seen, been witness to somebody who has Christmas tweaked out because it is about to go down.
I gotta say,
right
I'm
now.
Really on the opposite side of this.
Perfect.
I'm a big, like, I actually have gotten less. I used to be a bigger Christmas grump, and then over time, I'm like, it makes people happy. Like, it's all cool. But Christmas stresses me out. I think it's like a hangover from being the only Jewish kid in my elementary school. And so every Christmas they'd be like, and also Jenny can explain Hanukkah. And I'm just like, it's not that big a deal. It's fine. But yeah, so Christmas always like a little bit stresses me out. So it's not like a holiday I go out of my way to consume. Well, but I am very excited to see this. I love things that bring joy to people.
Yes.
I think it'd be great if you had like a Passover movie empire.
I would love that. Well, like
if you could like really make that the cinematic Jewish holiday.
It's so well, I mean, part of the reason that I'm stoked about working on Rugrats is because it's like the only significant Jewish holiday special that I grew up with.
I was going to say, I meant to ask you if is a rebooted Rugrats going to have a new Hanukkah special?
I mean, I can't comment, but I can say that I'm for the moment at the wheel. So.
Yes. Make it happen. Because Hallmark is promising two Hanukkah movies next year.
I've already, like, speaking of my manager,
tell me you're pitching.
I am.
Yes. Oh, sweet.
I'm like already, I'm in on this.
Please invite me to the set.
I promise.
I will come to Vancouver. I want to see this happen.
This is glorious.
Oh, yeah, because you could write a Hanukkah movie book. Like Jewish holiday movie.
I got Hebrew Hammer and Eight Crazy Nights. That's kind of
it. It's shorter than Jewish sports.
But I mean, Passover is more important, right?
Passover is more important, but like the high holy days are like the most important, and I think the best cinematically because it's like a whole like period of time.
And then there's Home for Purim.
Mm-hmm. This is great.
No, that's not a real movie. That was in for your consideration, the Christopher Guest movie.
Yeah. Oh, but that should be a movie.
This is a Hanukkah Christmas miracle that is happening right now. I love witnessing this. What's going to happen is Alonzo has 1 minute to tell us about all the Christmas movies he's watched in the past week. 1 minute, not a second more. It is the El Mero Mero de Navidad Christmas Minute. Start that clock, Casey.
Boom. Okay. Hallmark has been a big-ass letdown this year, I got to say. So I really enjoyed Lifetime's A Very Nutty Christmas. Melissa Joan Hart, who is kind of the queen of these things. Barry Watson plays a nutcracker who comes to life and helps her bakery get through the holiday season. Quite charming. I really dug it. Also, Marissa Jarrett Whittaker and Conchita Farrell. Meanwhile, in Hallmark, Homegrown Christmas, Welcome to Christmas, Memories of Christmas. I know I saw these movies. I couldn't tell you which was which. although one of them had Christina Milian, I think Memories of Christmas, but otherwise super generic. And then Time for Me to Come Home for Christmas, which is like the most awkward, lengthy Christmas title ever, based on a Blake Shelton song. I have no idea what even happens in that movie. It's about people getting stuck in airports and on buses and thinking that maybe they need to go home, and each has lost a parent and they find bland love. So Hallmark, up your game. You got more movies this year, but they're not as interesting. Lifetime is doing more interesting stuff. And I hear Freeform is killing it.
Boom, that's how it's done.
Do you time these out at home? Do you practice at home?
I don't.
That's amazing.
That's straight up. He doesn't even write these down. That's off the dome piece, yo. That's off the dome piece.
I did just watch the Christmas Prince sequel, which ends the exact same way as Neil Breen's Fateful Findings. Very similar films.
With fewer laptops being thrown off of desks.
Sadly.
Yes.
You know what I like about those movies? They're all dressed exclusively in the kinds of clothes that come in plastic bags. At Kmart. Like they come in
Kmart
like multi-packs.
Oh yeah, no, Dave is like Ross Dress for Less, it's everybody. And he says all the women have the long curl hair. All of them.
I mean, they all got the same Mai Tai at Dry Bar that I did.
All right, it is time for our staff picks, y'all. Every week we ask a panel to tell us about a movie we think folks should check out, any movie at all. Jenny, you're our guest. I'll start with you.
Well, I wanted to talk about a movie about pop stardom that deals with trauma in, I think, a much better way, which is Frank, which is a movie I think is underrated.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
And I'm a staunch Frank defender.
Oh no, are we gonna fight? Because like I don't like Frank, but you don't like Vox.
Right. Yeah. So that which is totally valid.
I don't like Frank either.
Kumate.
So.
But here's why I like Frank. I like the thesis that it posits, which is basically that it's the story of a guy who is a musical genius, and everyone thinks it's because he has a mental illness, but in fact, everything about his life and career was hindered by that. And like that's sort of like the reveal at the end, and I think that's beautiful and untouched in a lot of other media that reveres creative geniuses. And I specifically think it handles that a lot better than Vox Lux did, because it just handles it a little more sensitively. It handles the effects of viral fame a lot better. And I enjoyed the process of watching it a lot more.
Word.
Yeah.
Frank, that's what's up, yo. Alonzo, what do you got?
I also picked a movie about women in pop music and how they can respond to the threat of exploitation and are ultimately able to sort of stand for themselves and create the message they want to give to the world.
What is it?
Josie and the Pussycats.
Yes!
I knew you were going to say that.
Not surprised.
I knew you were going to say that.
So ahead of its time.
So a completely misunderstood satire when it came out. I think people are finally getting behind it and understanding what it was really about. I might have even made it a stat pick before. I don't care. Go see Josie and the Pussycats. It's so great, and the songs are awesome.
That's what's up. You have said it before, but it's great. Yeah.
People's memories are short.
Yeah.
I think that's like the thing that Vox Lux did do really well, and that a lot of movies need to do better. If there's a hit pop song, it better sound like a song that becomes a hit.
Yeah.
And Josie and the Pussycats, those songs are bangers.
Yeah.
It's true.
And like the Sia songs in Vox Lux, I thought were good.
You're
too.
Like, oh, great. Yeah. Sia did this shit, obviously.
April, what do you got?
Another movie about a woman and music and two different kinds of music and autonomy. And this one is it's more about folk music versus more popular music, more jazz music.
It Mighty Wind?
It is Cold War. Polish film that's up for the foreign language Oscars, and it is so fucking good. It's made by Paweł Pawlikowski, who did Ida, which did that take home the Oscar when it?
I want to say yes.
I think it did. So black and white photography, and the woman who plays this girl she's a peasant. It's 1950s Cold War, obviously, as the title suggests, and. She gets into this school where she gets to be housed and fed and educated in music and dance as long as she tours around and performs and does these kind of like pro-Stalin folk dances and performances. But she also falls in love and has to decide, you know, like this is it's kind of like a Casablanca retelling in a way, is how they made it. Because they fall in love and then, you know, they're also in the Cold War and there's no opportunity and there's, you know, so much bad shit happening. And the guy crosses over the border and then the girl doesn't. And then their love story is like 10 years long in Cold War. And you just kind of see them going back and forth. Like they're not ready to be together. The world is keeping them apart. But they have a lot of really great folk music that they perform. And at the same time, kind of do an updated, more contemporary version for the outside world, outside of the Soviet Empire.
Is it out now?
I think it's coming out this week. It's on VOD in some places.
Okay.
This sounds awesome.
I know it's an Amazon film, but I don't know if it's on Amazon.
I don't know if it's on Amazon, but please see Cold War. It is so beautiful.
Why?
Ricky, are you doing a woman in pop music?
It's not in pop music, but it's a woman in music.
Okay.
And this is something that I believe April has talked about before here, is I finally watched Living on Soul, which is a documentary about Daptone Records and Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings and Charles Bradley. And it's a documentary / concert film. So we learn from all the musicians I mentioned and the band members about the history of Daptone Records. And then we see them, and it's all told over this concert that you're also watching that happened at the Apollo Theater over three nights. And it's fucking like, I am all here for old black women in sequins,
yes.
Fucking tearing it up on stage and just being positive as fuck. Like, Sharon Jones and Charles Bradley, like, both of those, everybody in this documentary, but them in particular, they just have this fucking joy at knowing, like, you know, they got this second chance in their careers and in life, you know, because at the time Sharon Jones has passed away since, but she had cancer, but, like, you know, just was, you know,
Charles
enjoying
Bradley passed away since,
and Charles
too,
Bradley
yeah.
passed away as well, and she was just finding this newfound fame. And there's at the end of the concert, at the end of the movie, she tells like a little quick story about how she is living with cancer right now, and, like, talking to God. And I mean, I'm doing it in a very much, like, reserved way, but she's like, you know, I said to God, I'm grateful. I mean, she's fucking going hard, and you feel good. And if you do not dance in your living room while you watch this shit, there is something wrong with you, y'all. There is something wrong with you, because that shit is fire.
Clinically
it makes
wrong.
You feel good. Clinically wrong. Thank you. Medically. God damn it.
We earlier, like, I think Grace Jones was mentioned, and I was mm-hmm. like, where is the Grace Jones biopic?
Well, there's a doc. Then,
there's a doc. There's know. Another doc on but Hulu right now. I started watching that. I started watching it April.
But then I was like, wow, Janelle Monáe is, like, at the height of being Janelle Monáe. She'd be such a good Grace Jones.
Yes. I don't think Grace Jones would have... She would be like, she would dog it.
No,
Grace Jones.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember Grace Jones saying she's, like, the one, like, current pop singer who she really likes.
Is that
Janelle
right?
Monáe.
Yes.
And so that's, like, part of the reason, but also because I think she could do it. The only thing is she's very short. So they would have to, like, do a lot of, like, hobbit
actually,
faking in.
Grace Jones.
When you're at wedding.
Grace Jones is just my height.
Really?
Yeah, when I met her and she stood up and I was just like, oh, you. It's just that her persona
I
is so big.
I think of her as so big.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She's such a good performer and actor. Like, she's such a good actor that she can give you the feeling that she is, like, 10 feet tall. But yeah, she's just like 5'6".
And any conversation about movies about pop singing women, I have to throw out Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains, Starstruck, Breaking Glass, and We Are the Best.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, We Are the Best is so good. Watched that.
So good. All right. Hey, next week it's our Christmas Bonanza episode. I hope you'll be able to handle that emotionally, Alonzo. You might just explode into
it's all been leading to this.
And we will be talking about Love Actually. Hell yeah. We will also be talking to we'll also be talking to Dan from Deck the Hallmark podcast. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, leave us that good review on Apple Podcasts. 5-star reviews get a shout out on the show. And you know what? There is no review this week.
Bah humbug.
But
oh well.
Tell a friend about our show. Let them know that we're out here doing
this
our thing.
This Vox Lux one is going to get it because we have so fire in here.
I know. I'm like, what if? Because, like, I was just so passionate. Now I'm like, what if, like, Brady Corbet hears this?
He's going to love you. He's going to be like, you know, she's got some points.
It's valid. Yeah. Valid.
She's got some valid
points.
She's right.
For Chucky.
I should burn this.
Before we go, I just want to give a shout-out to another Max Fun podcast, one of my favorite Max Fun shows, Heat Rocks. We've had both of us on here before, Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes. This week's episode is a special one. They've got Macy Gray on talking about Kanye's song Lost in the World off the My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy album. You know what? We got a clip from that, so let's take a listen.
Oh, Lost in the World. I played that. I drove to Vegas, and I played it almost the whole way there.
Lost in the World.
Oh, that song is just amazing. It has, like, this, like, vocally, there's this kind of choir build. Like, it starts out small, and then, like, if you're just listening to it, it sounds like one big choir. But if you know vocals, you can hear the different melodies coming in as the song grows. And then his verse on that is bananas. I just think that's, like, one of the most perfect songs I ever heard.
So that was Macy Gray talking to our friends Oliver Wong and Morgan Rhodes of Heat Rocks. That show is so dope, y'all. If y'all don't listen to that show, listen to it because they always have great guests.
I was really hoping it was a movie where they watch Heat every week.
I would be all about that, yo. All about that.
You know what other great guests they have on the show this month?
Who's that?
Talking about Christmas music.
Oh, my man, El Mero Mero himself.
Who's got two thumbs and is on Heat Rocks this month?
Yes, son.
Me.
Jenny, thank you for being here, yo.
Thank you guys for having me. This is really fun.
Yeah, this is fantastic. Tell the people where they can see you online, the social media. When is that Rugrats coming out?
You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, all that, at Jenny Jaffe.
Okay, yeah. All right. That's what's up. Hey, if you have a comment or suggestion, about this week's show, tweet at us at WhoShotYouPod. Send us an email at WhoShotYouMaximumFun.org. Leave us a message on the WhoShot line. The number is WSY-803-1664. I believe that was 979-803-1664. Yes. Also call in if you have any questions, recommendations, or compliments. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. April Alonzo. I love you both.
Sir.
This is dope. This is a production of MaximumFun.org. And that's what's up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.